Welcome to the Tomorrow's Visitors podcast. My name is Kieran Swale. I'm a tourism innovation specialist at Southern Regional College. I'm a big supporter of local tourism and bringing people together. And in this podcast series, I'm going to be talking about tourism in Ireland, north and south, about emerging visitor trends and new technologies, new visitor experiences and culture and heritage and visitor attractions. I'm going to be talking to the connectors from tour guides to food and drink producers, from tour operators and agents to accommodation providers, trying to get a handle on what tomorrow's visitors are actually looking for, and finally then sharing some practical tips for tourism businesses. So for the latest episode, log on to tomorrowsvisitors.com, or if you have any ideas for future podcasts, please get in touch. In my first podcast, I'm delighted to have the opportunity to talk to John Fitzgerald. John's chair of the Ballyhoura Fáilte. Ballyhoura region is a region in North Cork and South Limerick, set up by the Rural Development Company approximately about 20 years ago. But I was fortunate enough to get to meet John at the Cross Border Tourism Conference, which was meant to be online, offline, but ended up being online. And John gave a really interesting talk back in April. And really, arising from that, I asked John to come on and be my first guest. So in this podcast, really, he explains what Ballyhoura has to offer as a region in terms of walking and cycling and history and why people come there. The whole podcast is really fascinating, absolutely fascinating, and really refreshing in terms of a very honest appraisal of where tourism is going and what we need to do for those of us that work in tourism, the importance of putting the service back into tourism. John also owns the Kennedy Rooms, and he talks about that, which is a converted boarding school, and how he uses this for events and also more recently as a film location. He talks in this podcast about the growth of film tourism in Ireland, and this is certainly very much a niche area. Gives a really interesting insight into his own background of being an engineer, and that affords him the opportunity to work for two American companies and travel the world. He also really is very, very optimistic and positive person, and this comes through the conversation of he really has this can-do attitude. I asked him at the end of it then, you know, what could you advise people? And he talks about three things, and the emphasis is very much on you've got to be different, you've got to be quirky, and you've got to make service exceptional. I know that you'll get a lot out of this. I really do. I'm just so sorry it was only 30-odd minutes. This is a very fascinating man, and I think you're really going to enjoy this.
John, good afternoon. Good to see you, John.
Kieran, my friend, how are you?
I'm doing good. John, thanks a million. So this is Kieran Swale, Tomorrow's Visitors. John's going to be one of my first clients on our Tomorrow's Visitors podcast, which we're launching very, very soon. And John, thank you for agreeing. John Fitzgerald, John, you're currently chair of Ballyhoura Fáilte, which is one of many interesting jobs and roles and positions that you have. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about Ballyhoura Fáilte, how you got involved with them, and where Ballyhoura Fáilte is going, please.
Okay, welcome. Good morning, good afternoon, whatever. Ballyhoura Fáilte is one of the original rural development groups, stroke agencies, stroke regions, or whatever they're called now. And it's basically South Limerick, North Cork, and West Tipperary. And it's predominantly rural, it's predominantly farmland, and it's predominantly hills, valleys, rivers, lakes, and stuff. And as I said originally on the other meeting, the previous one we did, as a tourism location, it's probably one of the nicer tourist locations that doesn't have a coastline, which kind of people forget that we're so obsessed by cliffs, beaches, kind of headland in Ireland, that if you don't have a kind of a West Cork, a Dingle, a Wicklow, or, you know, a sunny southeast, if you don't have a coastline, a northern coastline, we tend to be tourism-related focused on coastlines. Now, there's obviously a big thing going on with the Hidden Heartlands and stuff like that. So Ballyhoura is a bit like that. It's rural, it's compact, It's let's say you've Cork City on the south and north, and Limerick on the north, and Shannon Airport quite close, and then Killarney on the west, and then you've Turles, Tipperary on the other side. So it's bounded by reasonably sized cities or big towns. But what it's made up of is fantastic walks, great cycles, fabulous history, culture. You got the Loch Gore standing stones and the prehistoric kind of connection there into one of the oldest kind of living areas ever in Ireland. It goes back 6,000 years to when Stone Age. And it's just a fantastic place to go, and it's uncommercialized. What you'll find as well in Ballyhara is it's a people place. It's like a lot of areas now, the food is becoming a much bigger factor. And we'll talk about that later on when we talk about tourism, because I think it's going to become... Now, we've always talked about food in the past, but I think now, in the time we're in now, and particularly with the post-COVID, people have started to learn how to cook again, learn how to find stuff, learn how to grow a lot more. So that could impact. Now, again, like, there is no right and wrong answer, and no one's going to have the answer. I don't care what anyone tells you today. Nobody has the answer for a year's time. Nobody. And we can all make our best guesses and our best estimates based on our own knowledge. But then who's going to judge who's right and wrong, because it is such a volatile scenario.
I'm going to jump in there. Yeah, you're so right, because we don't really know, and we're getting all these predictions that there might be a second wave. So, you know, in tourism, we're cautious. I think I'm going to pick up on then a few things. I am a previous visitor to your region on about five or six occasions. Sport has brought me there, mountain biking in particular, and I've fond memories. I've brought three different groups down at different stages. One to participate in an event called the Ballyhara Beast, which absolutely nearly killed me. but great crack. And then another, I brought the Duffer cyclists down for more road cycling, but we did mountain biking. And we stayed with Seamus in the Ballyhara Hostel in Finnan, which was fantastic. And then the same group, we did the Mizzen to Mallin, and our second overnight stay, first night was in Goline, and then our second overnight stay was in Cliffin. So these guys 4 or 5 years ago were amazed about your countryside and about what it has to offer when we cycled through it, and I was as well. And I think I'm going to touch on something, that two things. You're right about the food, but don't underestimate the people. And my visits to Ballyhara region, and that's not just limited to one town, by the way, or village, is the people and the welcome, whether or not that is fact. Maybe you didn't at that time get a lot of northern visitors, but we were so welcomed. And this has stuck with me, that as a region, how you've come to do that.
But you know why you picked up on that more so than you would? Because let's say, for instance, you're going to Clissamore, you're going to the Giant's Claws or whatever. You often hear people, the word people never comes into those equations, because generally those tourists are, I call them in and outers. They're straight in, straight out, right? So there's no connection whatsoever. But when you take a place like Ballyhara, for instance, right? You don't go to Ballyhara to spend 2 hours and leave. You just don't. You just, there's no point. It doesn't work. So therefore, what happens is the connection to the people becomes a lot more real and a lot more tangible, let's say, than going to Trinity College or going to any of those major tourists. And this is what I said the last time as well, is we have to get into our head that there's an awful lot more in Ireland than Killarney, the Clissamore, the Titanic Centre, there's five or six which is regarded as, like, if you're in America and you're meeting a sales agent in America, they're selling five or six things for Ireland, but they're not the things that people want to see.
This is interesting, because I believe you're spot on there about the people and the connectivity that you guys seem to have. You're the chair of this organization, the Ballyhara Fáilte, that is. So I don't know how you do that, but it happens organically. I don't need to know the ins and outs, but it seems to happen.
I think it's fundamentally, they're happier that you're there. You understand what I mean, right? Yeah. They're more content because they don't have the high volumes, right? Yeah. They don't have coach road after coach road. It becomes tiring. And if you're running a cafe shop and stuff like that, and you're there in your fifth year of trading, and you're doing 35 coaches a day, the people thing becomes very short. So when you're in a smaller rural area and you get discrete groups, small groups, family groups, carloads, cyclists like you, there's a bigger engagement and there's a bigger need or willingness to engage on those secondary tourist locations, as I call them. And that's why I think, even if you take Ireland's hidden heartlands, I mean, we have got the most beautiful inland waterways anywhere in the world, and they're virtually untouched, right? Yeah. Yeah. And the stuff like that, and the, like the Comer Mountains, like the Ballyhower Mountains, and like walking is such a big game. That I'm not connected to it because I don't do it, but friends of mine do, and they go every single weekend. They go somewhere for 6 hours, 7 hours.
I've just been on your website there, your new website, I should say, and I saw a signpost, an old one that said Limerick 40 minutes, Cork 40 minutes, and I loved it. And I was like, yeah, well, whatever way you've done that, maybe it's superimposed on it, but actually on the walkway, and what a happy photograph. And I thought, you know what, I want to be up there.
Yeah. No, the new website got launched, I think, last month. So I actually love the new website, and I'll tell you why, because you pick your trip, tour, walk, drive, cycle, whatever it is, on how you feel. Because if you look at the website again, it's all about feelings. What do you feel like doing today?
Yeah.
And that's the way we pitched it, to be slightly different, because it's such a competitive market. But again, it goes back to what you said about people, right? Getting back to what Ireland was renowned for, right? You may as well be going to Disneyland, going to some of these big places, because it's in person. And I get shot for it by some of the big organizations because they're trying, but they cannot, they're incapable of doing it because of the volume of people coming through. And it's numbers, numbers, numbers. And a lot of those big attractions are now getting... Now, okay, in a funny sort of way, COVID has probably helped, right? Because we were starting to max out in throughput and capability, which actually has a negative impact on service. And this is where it goes back to that people thing again. The service in some of those big places now, you get the complaint levels. If you look at TripAdvisor and stuff, all of a sudden the complaint level percentages are starting to rise. And you're wondering why. It's because the volume, the throughput, service dropping. Right? What COVID is going to do now is rebalance it a bit for a few years. So the numbers will drop back a bit and we'll be able to put the service back into it, if you understand. And that's why I think places like Ballyhara, places like Hidden Heartlands, places like... well, it's Munster Vales and stuff is now the new niche, if you like, because that's more honest and genuine. And
before I leave Kilfinan, I should actually say, because you've reminded me about the people and the welcome that we received in Molly's, the little restaurant there, and we have a video, and it's still played on our website, that she came out and sang with us. And we
need to do that. You need to put that up on the podcast.
She just went with, and it was magic, you know. And those are the, I mean, you've epitomized exactly what I look for, and I'm of a certain age, and my demands are quite easily met, actually, you know, in terms of a welcome and a package. But it's actually is that engagement. So tell us a little bit about the Kennedy Rooms then.
Well, the Kennedy Rooms, it's an old convent, large convent in Brough, just outside Limerick City. Somewhere it's kind of on the north side of Ballyhara, near Kilmallock and stuff, and around Loch Gar. Most people probably know Loch Gar, 5 minutes from Loch Gar. But it's an old FCJ, Faithful Companions of Jesus convent, which was built in 1856 and was a boarding school, girls' boarding school for ladies, should I say. It was kind of a finishing school, Swiss type back then. And you had to be a rich farmer or a rich businessman to send your daughter to the place. So in a great sort of way, and this goes back to where we have a lot of black stories in our country, and it has no shadow on the building. It there's no kind of abuse stories. There's no, you know, nothing like that. So it's a very clean convent, as I would get. They closed about 7 or 8 years ago. And we got it 2 years ago, and we turned it into an event center. So we, because we're Last Box Events, which is our main company, is an events management company for mostly high-end corporate clients, mostly from the US, incentive travel stuff. So they would be coming to Ireland for 4 or 5 days at the behest of their company, a reward for such a good year, sales or whatever. And they're entertained for 5 or 6 days. And we usually get 1 or 2 nights of that to create a gala dinner a la Downton Abbey, a la kind of medieval Game of Thrones and stuff. So that's fundamentally our game. And when we got to convent, then we started doing rooms, permanent rooms. So we had them ready and done. So if a client wanted to come to us, we could do this fancy dinner ourselves rather than going to a hotel.
How many can you accommodate in that?
we can, there is,
I mean, numbers, not over
150 in a place called Camelot Street, and then there's about 100 in the chapel, and then there's a couple of other, there's, we can do 300 in another room. So there's three or four different rooms, and we have a pub as well. We've built a pub called the Nun's Room, which is Ireland's first non-alcoholic bar. Now, it's not always non-alcoholic. If there's a private client there, we can still bring in alcohol. But essentially, from a public, it's the non-alcoholic bar in first one in Ireland. So, and now we're turning it into a film set, because the events business, which is, we'll segue nicely onto what's happening with events and tourism, is in trouble for a while. So we're kind of sliding sideways into movies and creating movie sets and stuff in the convent and surrounding areas, et cetera, et cetera. So that's really rather big challenge.
Have you seen too much away, John? Have you something in production at the moment?
We made one last year. We did one for RTE last month. And there's four or five solid inquiries. But see, what's happening at the minute, Kieran, is that all film in Ireland is on hold.
Yeah.
I think I might be wrong. I think there's about 32 individual productions either started, in process, or ready to start in Ireland at the moment, waiting to get the green light from the government so that they can go ahead.
Okay.
And that's going to be one of the biggest growth areas in this country over the next few years because of the 7.5% tax incentive on it. And it's going to be, you got to remember, there's positives out of COVID, right? And one of the positives is that everyone is on Netflix, Amazon, Apple, all those kind of downloadable channels, sources, like they're running out of content. Right, and content. I'm talking to people now. It's all about content. We need a mini series. I don't care what it is. Just give me a mini series. Yeah. And the budgets are there. Money's there. So I'm telling people now: if you've got a nice place, make sure you get it on a register of locations and stuff for the Irish Film and Television Network. And because there is scouts driving around this country looking for locations at the moment as we speak.
In Northern Ireland, we have Northern Ireland Television Screen, that you're probably familiar with as well. So probably have a similar role. So obviously that tax incentive is good for you as a business. And over the last 3 to 4 months, obviously things have stopped for you. In terms of, if I can ask you, in terms of where are you going now within the next, with the time of this podcast is 1st of July. So where are you going for the next 3 months with the Kennedy Rooms?
Nowhere. Okay. In blunt. Yeah. We're shut. Yeah. Some of the businesses are still renting space there, but from an events perspective, we had, I think, nine events booked for somewhere between April to September. Yeah. All of them cancelled or postponed. Every single event, whether it is 50 people, 200 people, whether it's a Dare Manor, Drumoland, or Dublin, all cancelled or postponed. Now, some of them have rebooked for next year and the year after. We have two clients who were booked for 2022 and have locked in the hotel already. Some have done a provisional booking for next year to see how it pans out. And again, these are predominantly American incentive travel, corporate things. But the fear is, see, I have a thing here, I'm in a note here. There's need versus fear, okay? Yeah. There's a need to go and do, and there's a fear to go and do. So which side of the fence are you on? And what's happening with tourism, I think, is that need versus fear. It's when you get over the fear so that you can have the need, or have, you know, that's going to be the challenge. And that's when I said at the very start of the conversation, there's nobody out there that can tell me what's going to happen in a year's time. Because they may be close to being right, but it's so hard to predict. Because one of the things I think, the secret of tourism for the next 36 months, I'd say, is going to be local.
Yeah.
You know? And I think it's how we sell. I saw something the other day where some hotel, I won't name it, sold a week for a family for $4,500 in Ireland. And I'm saying, okay, guys, if you talk about the stereotypical shoot yourself in the foot, you know, I mean, what you could do with $4,500 going to Spain for a family of four would be incredible, right? Versus $4,500 to go to a hotel bed and breakfast in Ireland, you know. It's just, if we start doing that, we're going to dig a bigger hole, you know. But I believe that it's going to be family-based. It's going to be small groups. The comfort level for anyone to travel, like the Americans can't travel at the moment because you're this European van. How long is that going to last for? And again, even if that ban gets lifted, the fear level, the comfort level of somebody getting on a plane in Newark or Kennedy or whatever in America, Boston, to fly to Ireland, to rent a car, to drive around the countryside. I want to go to the States, and I'm not going because I just don't feel comfortable enough. And I don't think it's ready enough for us to travel en masse yet. So how long is that going to take? And if we have another couple of spikes, see, we're at a crossroads at the moment, more so than we were 2 months ago, because now the fear is going to increase if we start getting spikes. If you look what's happening in the States, it's just gone crazy. Right? England isn't too far behind. We're a bit better because we're managing it, I think, quite well. But it's if you're trying to get international tourists in, we're going to struggle, and no more than any other country. You know.
Yeah,
so we have the challenge.
Yeah, it has to be on. You know, for you as a provider, and if I'm working with tourism, but it has to be on. You're talking about local. It has to be on strategies of saying, you know, I'm looking at Bruff on a map here. So I live in Carrickdale in Belfast. You are 3 hours, 49 minutes from me. So that's doable. Yeah. But when I actually drill that down, okay, I'm coming down probably the M7 there, but that's doable. And yet you look at a map of Ireland, I'm thinking, because of the motorway network and the access, I'm looking down, you're right down to the M7 to Bruff.
Yeah.
And then Mallock is a bit further south there. But so in around, say, 4 hours. Well, that's doable.
If you look at it, I think it's in our own head. Geographically, we see Ireland as a very big country, whereas in actual fact, it's not.
Yeah.
Right. And we have to get our head around that. That's we have to look at it from time. If you were in America or in continental Europe, 4 hour drive is nothing.
Nothing. Yeah.
I mean, they do it for a weekend trip away. You know, it wouldn't even bother them. So that's why we have to. There's going to be so many changes in attitudes and approaches. But I just equated the need versus fear. And until that pendulum swings either way, right? How great is the need and how strong is the fear? Right? And that's really the blocking thing, I think, is like everyone has a need to go and do something. They want to get out once it opened up. I want to go somewhere. They're not necessarily comfortable enough to get in a plane to go somewhere, but they still want to go somewhere else. So that's where the opportunity is for the next few years. And what that does then is that maybe create a change in habits. So people may, instead of their two holidays abroad a year, they may take one at home as a norm every year, which is traditionally wouldn't have been.
You're spot on with that. And I think what you've said to us is very words of wisdom here, John, you know, because, you know, on a personal level, we're going, we wanted to go to the Republic of Ireland, but because my sister-in-law is coming from Derby, and there's only recent clarity about whether she needs to isolate for 14 days. So we stay within Northern Ireland, part of the United Kingdom, so we have to do that. So we're going to Port Stewart. And you know what? Yes, it's got the beach, and I'll throw the bikes in. We've got a wee house, and three families will be together, and sure, that's the most important thing. And a firm believer, you've said about the fear and the need, I'm a firm believer in going on holiday is the attitude you go on holiday with. The weather helps, of course. And the destination. But if you have the right attitude, and the minute you step into that car, that vehicle, that bicycle, that train, that automobile, whatever it is, you're on holiday, inverted commas. And it is that shift that we need. Yeah. We're on holiday now.
But even when you get there, you have a dramatic change, because whereas what I love about holidays is go for really nice meals and have a nice place and go for a drink and stuff. I love that. So that now is going to be in trouble for a while, because whereas, like, I'm not sure I want to go to a pub where I have to sit a meter or 2 meters from somebody and I can't move from my seat when I'm in. And I'm not saying that won't change quickly once things come back to normal. But at the moment, if I go to a pub next week whenever it's open, I have to sit and table service. I can't move around. I can't walk up to the bar and say, "Yes, Kieran, how's it going? I haven't seen you in ages." You just can't. It's the essence of it. See, personally, I'd maybe prefer if they were closed until it's fixed, because this half-assed thing, it's people investing a lot of money on. I should have bought container lots of Perspex in March, because the amount of Perspex is out there now. Yeah. And it takes away, if you look at it, and if people get serious about this, it isn't what the Irish pub is about, no matter how you call it. Yeah. It just won't work. And some pubs will never work because they're too small and too confined anyway. Right? And then the ones with restaurants have a chance at least. So from that point of view, what you said is right. If you go away with your family, your group of people, six or eight people, and you get a house, your socializing will start to center on that house then, or the beach, not necessarily the pub down the street. Yep. So that's where the change is happening. I see it here now as well. We have more friends over for a drink and we have a barbecue here. And it's like, whereas once a week and once before we go to the pub and have a bite to eat and meet up with people, we haven't done that since March. So yeah, it's habitual.
To the home and that home bubble, if you like, extended home bubble.
Yeah. But it's all going to be about what habits we get into. It's like our purchasing habits. Yeah. People now that wouldn't have bought online pre-March have now bought online a lot more than they would have done previously. So what's happened is it's fast-tracked the learning for some people who would have been teetering on the edge of comfort to buy online, whereas now it's becoming norm. Zoom calls. You look at TV. You look at the news channels. They're all on Zoom. So why would you spend the money to fly somebody to your office to have a meeting, right, which is what's happening? Like the TV stuff, the interviews in the morning news, they're all done on Zoom or similar platform. Yeah. And they've saved the expense of putting someone up in a hotel. So there's going to be a lot of learnings and stuff like that. And also the other thing is people working from home as against working from the office. If I had a business that had 200 people in the office, I'd be starting looking now, how can I make 100 desks out of those 200 people?
Yes, yeah.
By rotating people to stay at home. You reduce your real estate,
Yeah. Listen, we've kind of covered, I was going to ask you about the tours, so you've kind of covered that. You've preempted my next question, but tell us a little bit about, so for those that are listening to this for the first time, I mean, you wear many hats, so tell us a little bit about, you're a former amateur jockey, and I don't know whether you still have an amateur.
No, I wouldn't even claim that. I think I had 10
or 15. Come on, John, you are.
I think I had 10 or 15 rides, right? So I wouldn't even claim I had one winner. But no, I mean, I'm an engineer. I worked in R&D for an American company for 14 years, and then I got a job in Dell as a mechanical engineer in Dell, which is very strange because I wasn't IT, but I tell people now, how did you get a job in Dell as a mechanical engineer? And I said, you got to understand, it's not all about the computing. The box that the computer goes into is what I worked on. So I worked on the design of the metal and the plastic that covered all the expensive bits. So that was what I did. And I was there for another 10, 15 years. And those two companies allowed me to travel the world on someone else's dime, which was that I'd be forever grateful for what I've been all over the world with those two companies. States, lived in the States for 4 years in total over a period of two or three spends and went to Asia. When you work for a company like that, that were both growing fast, you got an experience that you couldn't buy or you couldn't teach anybody. So I would consider myself an optimist and very positive, but some of that was because I worked for two American companies who their inherent heart and soul was optimistic, positive. So I wasn't born with an optimistic kind of viewpoint, but I gained it by working with people and surrounded by people, either working for me or I was working for them. And everything was optimistic and positive, and it was a can-do. So I ended up with a can-do.
Bring us up to speed then with you have a license as a flat on a national hunt.
So there's things when you're busy in life and you get to a certain age as well, you're looking for something. Now, I'm not the guy that would buy the motorbike. The big Harley because middle crisis or not someone to buy a boat or a yacht. So I have a small farm and I was always into horses. So I took out a license there 5 or 6 years ago. And it's my absolutely headspace stuff. And it keeps me sane. It keeps me level. And it gets me up out of bed 7 days a week.
And how many horses have you done? How many horses
I've eight at the moment and two brood mares, But it's fun. I find it fun. It's not a massive financial drain on me because once you have your own space and your own place, I'm not paying rent to anybody. I have a couple of lads coming right out. So from that point of view, it's actually very doable. And it's, again, anybody that's self-employed, one of the biggest challenges, and if anyone's going to learn anything from this COVID thing, is we work too hard. Okay, we're unconscious of the hours we put in and we never mark the hours. You're probably the same here now. I mean, if you started equating the hours and put a value on the hours, you said, gee, I wish someone was paying me those hours. But as a self-employed person, you're not a 9-to-5-er. You never really put enough value on it. What this COVID has done is, because people have to work from home a lot more, they started, I see my wife here now, it's just amazing. She started like just doing stuff, and like we're at home now. We're still doing a bit of work and mostly quotations, proposals, but we're still at home. So she did elderflower cordial the other day, and she's 30 bottles of that and the thing, and they're absolutely
sweet. Elderflower cordial, gorgeous.
But the point I'm making is, you have to find your sweet spot, your happy spot, whatever you're doing, right? And the rat race thing, I think this will change some of that to a certain extent. And it goes back to what I said earlier about offices. Maybe you may not have to spend 5 days a week in the office anymore. You might spend 2 or 3, and you're allowed to spend, you know, so that could change people's mental approach to life. And that has a knock-on effect into tourism. This is where I was trying to go with this, right? I'm in the big full circle.
Yeah.
And I think then at weekends, people feel that more time. They feel a bit more happier. They're not actually working 5 days a week, commuting in and out to Dublin, spending 3 hours, you know. And they suddenly realize, come on, this is Saturday morning. Let's go away for the weekend and come back Sunday night. So it takes, it's going to, a different type of pressure and stress, and it takes off your shoulders. So I think that's a key customer that we need to look at as going forward for those people who maybe have more of a willingness to do something unique or different and get off.
John, three tips then for like either anyone considering coming into the tourism industry now, or an existing tourism provider, small tourism provider. I don't know. We've covered a lot of ground here, but three tips.
But you see, Kieran, I mean, when I talk to you, I get it because you get it, right?
Yeah.
You have to be different. And they're not, like, everyone can't be different, right? Because there has to be consistency with the people who do the same stuff. But if you want to really make a mark, no matter how small you're doing, no matter what you're doing, it's just be quirky. And goes back to the people thing, service. Make the service exceptional, right? Absolutely exceptional. If you do that, if you're doing a restaurant, if you're doing a visitor experience, if you're doing anything, just little tiny little things will make the difference. Whether it is signage. If you have a visitor attraction, make your signage absolutely wicked. Don't have boring stuff. That stuff costs very little money.
Yeah.
You know, be quirky. Don't be afraid of going a bit mad. Some people will laugh at you, but you know what? That's what will bring people in, because they'll be the curiosity factor. And be brave, because as I said to you the last time we had this conversation, you will never, ever, ever in your life get a chance like this.
Yeah.
Ever. And what I mean by that is, it'll give you time to sit, to think. You're not working 16 hours a day. So it gives you time to reassess where you're at. Are you doing the right thing, first of all? Find that out. Are you doing what you should be doing? Because you might never get a chance to change again. Right? Because once all this thing kicks off, you're back in the rat race. No matter what your rat race happens to be, whether it is like commuting in out to Dublin every day, but everyone has their own rat race to a certain extent. But make sure you're on the right rat race. And that's what I found. Now, when we, like Rebecca and I, we discussed this at length, that this is the best time of our lives. Rebecca said it the other day, she's never had a better summer in her life. I've never been happier, more content, less stress. Okay, we still have all the other worries that go on. But in the environment you're in, you're working less hard, but you're working smarter. And it's just, I keep telling people, just find out if you're doing the wrong thing, now is the time to change. Because when you get back in, you won't be able to change, or you won't change. You want to change.
There's wonderful words of optimism there coming from you, and it's lovely to hear. And, I think of a lot of, I agree with a lot of things you're saying. And probably in our past conversations, we can identify with a lot. I think there's great hope coming from what you've said, you know, in this conversation. I know we could continue to talk. But and chat over, and I promise you, I will get to.
No, there will be a time.
I'm kind of hoping that I'm just looking on that map, and I'm thinking of get a tow bar in the car. And
no, but see the need. You're on the need versus fear. Depending on the start.
Not so much in the fear end of it. I have to say, it's more the need to get away. I think September could be coming for a weekend break somewhere around your part of the country.
Absolutely.
I might have a few other lads with me in tow, or maybe the family as well, perhaps. And
you're trying to attract people like you to get away with 4 or 5 or 6 people for a weekend. Yeah. And that's where I think our next couple of years. Now, I'll finish very quickly, if you don't mind, sorry, and because I didn't talk about it at all. A lot of the stuff I'm talking about, tourism point of view, doesn't have a massive economic impact to the providers. That's going to be the challenge, because a lot of people are going to do things that where they don't have to pay for. You know, it's not like they'll be going to a four-star hotel and on fancy restaurants in the cities. I think people will go out the country a lot more. There'll be less impact on the providers there other than coffee shops and small bars. So I think the economic impact, positive impact, won't be fantastic, but the return on the experience will be greater, if you understand what I'm trying to say.
I do,
I don't think those regions are going to make fortunes out of a lot of people driving around the countryside, because most of the stuff is free.
Yeah,
most of the good experiences are free. With walking, cycling, for instance, if you go with a group of people, you don't spend a fortune.
Yeah, you know? Well, yes, well, if you stay, you do.
Yeah, oh yeah, no, yeah.
We do, in a way.
No, but you like to smoke.
Go ahead.
No, you're cycling is only an excuse for the social for you guys.
Well, there is an element. No, stop giving secrets away here on this podcast. There is an element of that, all right. I'll be following your – you haven't talked too much about those racehorses, so you're obviously keeping those secrets.
There's two running Monday.
Okay, well, the podcast will be going out probably. It may well have gone. It may not be out by Monday. So,
Maybe if we record it three or four different ways, so with the winner and one of them, and then we play it back. So
we'll have a link. I'll be writing a blog to follow this. That'll go alongside this. So we'll write a link and we'll follow it. We'll follow with interest. Limerick Racecourse, I know it's very close to you. Yeah. I haven't been to, so.
The other thing is find your happy place and find your happy spot in this life, because I hate being life coach stuff, because that irritates me, some of those people. But it's just find out what you want to do. I keep telling this to people, I'm boring tell people, because now you'll never ever change once this kicks off again.
No, valid point. John, on that note, I'm going to say thank you very much for being one of my first 2 to 3 guests on the Tomorrow's Visitors podcast. Very memorable chat this has been, and looking forward to actually seeing you face to face again.
Absolutely.
I'm going to just hit this pause on this recording, John, if you could just hold there. Thank you.
So I hope you enjoyed my chat with John. Fantastic words of wisdom. Really fascinating insight into the world of tourism, both locally and nationally in Ireland, and the implications it has for us in tourism. You can visit the Ballyhoura region by going visit ballyhoura.com, or you could visit John's business at thekennedyrooms.com. And once again, my sincere thanks to John. Thank you for listening to Tomorrow's Visitors podcast. Please check out our website at www.tomorrowsvisitors.com for a summary of this episode and useful links. We're always looking to hear about new ideas, different destinations, the latest innovation in technology and tourism. So please get in touch on our social channels. If you get a chance, please review this Tomorrow's Visitor podcast on iTunes, as this helps us with spreading our message. So from me, Kieran Sweel, thanks for listening.